There are so many reasons for this. I have spoken on this many a time before. You know, you look at it from any angle, historical evidence or just the rationale of it, and also from the historical perspective, history before him, and also from the New Testament, the evidence of the New Testament and the Old Testament. All these fingers point that he never died in the first instance on the cross. So when he never died, if that is proved, then there is no question of rising from the dead. And I can speak for hours from different angles, but I should try to be brief. In this subject, it is difficult to be brief rather than to be lengthy. For instance, when we read in the New Testament, there are three periods which are distinct. Pre-crucifixion period, and the crucifixion itself, and the post-crucifixion period. They are just the three important periods. So let's start at the beginning. In the pre-crucifixion period, we notice Christ as praying to God, and with such earnestness, as apparently it's impossible for the prayer to be rejected. Also, he is known to have referred to two very important things. One, that he is going to the lost sheep of Israel. Second, that no miracle would be shown unto the people of this earth, or in this age, except the sign of Jonah, the prophet of the whale. Now, these two things are very significant and important as to what was to happen. They are in fact leaders in that direction. He was to leave the two tribes of Israel, which were found there at that time, and go to the 10 tribes of Israel which had migrated from the mainland previously. I mean, this is a historical fact and nobody debates this. So when he says that he is going to the lost tribe of Israel, or he has come for the lost tribe of Israel, the tribe which was before him, the two tribes, they were not the lost tribe. But in fact, those were the lost tribes who had lost touch with the main body of Israelites, who had been expelled from the mainland previously in various invasions by some other invaders. I mean, different time of history, they had migrated gradually from the mainland. So we believe that it was an indicator that he was to leave them and go in search of the tribe of Israel which were no longer there, and his ministry could not be fulfilled unless he had finished this job of addressing all the tribes of Israel. The second indicator, according to us, is more obvious, even more obvious than this one. People wanted some sign, and he said, "You will be shown only the sign of Jonah, the prophet of the whale." Now, what was the sign which he showed? It was not a resurrection from the dead. It was a sign that under apparently impossible conditions, he remained in the belly of the whale for 3 nights and 3 days and came out alive, while no ordinary human being could have survived that ordeal. So the simile is complete only when you believe that Jesus Christ also, peace be upon him, went through the same or even severer ordeal. Apparently, he should have died, but with the grace of Allah, he never died, and he came out alive. Again, referring to the Old Testament, we draw the same conclusion, because in the Old Testament, it was said that whoever claims to be from God, and he is a liar and imposter, he would be hanged from the cross. It's the cross. The word cross is not used, but the implication is obvious and everybody agrees that what he said is this, that he would be hanged from the cross till death. So this was the interpretation as understood by all the scholars of the time. And Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, never disagreed with it. So when he claimed to be from God, if he were to be crucified, that is to say, that crucifixion would have reached its logical conclusion, that is death. In that case, he would be counted among those, according to the Bible, who are accursed. And this is exactly why some scholars had to agree to this, unfortunately for them. They loved Jesus Christ on the one hand, and on the other, they agreed that he was an accursed person, though they justified this curse under the plea that he did it on his own accord for our sake. But that is proved to be wrong when you look at the second phase, that is the phase of crucifixion. There too, that the act of crucifixion also is very significant in many ways. For instance, number one, Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, at the last moment, is known to have said, Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani. O my Lord, why have you abandoned me? That is significant because if he was not told beforehand by God that he would be delivered from the cross, he could not have expected it. There was no question about God abandoning him. If this was decreed for him, and he knew that this was decreed, that he must give up his ghost upon the cross, then he should have said, you have not abandoned me. You are fulfilling your word. But that was something very different what he said was very different from that situation. He was expecting God to save him from crucifixion. And then it is said that he gave up the ghost. Now, the recent scholars have the scholars of this century, that this version of gave up the ghost and ascension is not trustworthy, and it was added into the Bible later on. So, in the revised version, American version, which was published a few years ago, there some very great important scholars of Christian world got together and investigated the whole thing, and they took out the entire chapter of ascension, and they said this was added later on, and it has no ground, no root in fact. And also they agree that this gave up the ghost is also an added factor. Some commentator has added this. And moreover, nobody could see giving up the ghost. Even in ordinary circumstances, when the death overtakes someone, people normally have to call a doctor to declare that such and such person is dead. And for that, he has to go through he has to find and search for some certain definite indications. But to see someone upon cross who hangs his head suddenly after a cry, it does not positively indicate that such a person has given up the ghost. On the contrary, there are indications that he could not have given up the ghost. Instead, he might have swooned. Now, that again, the fact of crucifixion tells us that the crucifixion did not take as long as normally it does, according to the custom of the time, or normally it did according to the custom of the time. Much less than that, in fact. According to some scholars, he was hardly allowed to remain upon the cross for 3 or some hours, because when they took him in a procession towards the place where he was to be crucified, it took him quite some time, and in the meanwhile the procession was mobbed and people jeered, and they had many lets and hindrances on the way. So most people believe that it was in the afternoon that he was put on cross. And it was a winter afternoon with shortened days. And before the sunset of that very afternoon, he was taken down. That is to say, he was hardly permitted to stay on cross more than 3 hours. That is a rough estimate. While normally it took 3 days and 3 nights for the cross to kill someone positively. And even there are instances where after 3 days people came out alive, because this was a means of slow, torturous death, not of a quick killing. It was a merciless way of killing through prolonged torture. And this is why it was the main arteries were avoided when the nails were driven through the, the palm of the hand or wrist. Either case is debatable. But now they believe that it was not the wrist, it was not the palm, it was the wrist where the nail was driven. Anyway, the point is, normally people took 3 days and 3 nights for a slow, torturous death. And it is rather strange for Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, to die within a very short time of 3 hours. Again, another fact is very significant. Why did Pilate choose that particular hour, that particular day? We have evidence from the Bible that Pilate was very hesitant in submitting to the Jews' demand because he knew he was innocent. Whatever doubt was left was removed by the dream of his own wife, which was sent to him while he was sitting in the jury. And then he said, I wash my hands of the blood of this innocent man. So we know that Joseph Arimathea, who was a close, not exactly disciple, but a very great admirer of Jesus Christ, and perhaps he had faith in him, but didn't want to disclose it to others. He was also a great friend of Pilate. It was arranged between them, in fact, that to save him from crucifixion, this was the best possible way. To have him put to cross on Friday, when Sabbath would begin, in a very short time, and according to the Jewish custom, no person was permitted to hang on Sabbath, that is, on the sunset of Friday. So that seems to be an organized affair. Moreover, his legs were not broken. This is also very significant, because in that short while, the legs must have been broken, while the two thieves who were hanged along, their legs were broken and his legs were not broken. Again, it's very important that when his side was pierced, according to the evidence of the Bible, the blood gushed out. And in some translations they say rushed out, it's the one and the same thing. Now, gushing and rushing of blood is not a passive phenomenon. This active phenomena can only take place if the heart is beating. Because if some blood is collected somewhere and that is coagulated after death, you can't describe the phenomena of oozing as gushing out. It can ooze passively perhaps. So this is again an indicator that he was alive. Then in the post-crucifixion period, we come to learn of his disciples applying some balm on his body, some ointment, which was prepared in advance. And according to the evidence, there were 12 ingredients of that ointment in the name of for which each apostle had contributed. And that recipe is still preserved in many books, Eastern as well as Western. And according to that formula, one can clearly understand that that recipe is used for healing wounds, for fighting infection, for removing pain, and all that is required after somebody is wounded to heal him as quickly as possible. So, what is the significance of applying that ointment on a dead body while it was not even the custom of the Jews? Had it been a customary thing, then one could extend one's belief to the point that perhaps just because of that they did it. So, St. John had to add this in his version. When he said that that ointment was applied according to the Jewish custom. Now, this one sentence has proved to be a telltale sentence against St. John's claim that he was of Jewish origin. Because the recent scholars, the contemporary scholars of study of Bible, have now agreed on this point, that this sentence could not have been said by St. John if he himself had been of Jewish origin, because it was not a Jewish custom to anoint the body, the dead bodies, and it was completely something new to the Jewish. So that had a significance. He was wounded, and it was for healing him that all this was gone through, all this trouble. Now, when he is removed, he is kept secretly in a place which is called grave, sepulchre, or grave in the but as you know that, it was a small room-like cave in which people also sat along. And it is not just a grave like the Muslims bury their dead nowadays. It's quite a spacious place. And it was in that cave that his body was kept, but secretly. Now, the second thing we hear after the disappearance of his body, which was again speaking of connivance between Joseph and Pilate, because he went to him and reported it, and the answer was in a counter question. Already dead? That is what he said. And he knew better than anybody else, because he had been sending so many people to crucifixion, that normally people don't take so short a time to die. The second thing we hear is that the Jews are after his body, and they fail to find. And they not only complain, generally speaking, but they go to Pilate and register this complaint. According to the New Testament, they said, he was a very cunning man. We must have his body to assure ourselves that he's dead. Otherwise, he may not have died. He may reappear and claim that he has risen from the dead. That is exactly the suspicion of the people of the time. That normally people don't die so soon, and perhaps this is what is going to happen. And that is exactly what happened. Then when he is seen walking out, he is known to have visited his people, his followers, disciples, and in one instance we know that they got scared. They thought he was a ghost. As someone else earlier has mentioned in the New Testament, that he gave up the ghost. So if he gave up the ghost, it should be a ghost seen by the people. So when they are afraid and want to run away, Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, calls them back. And this is what he says, I am not a ghost. So whom would you believe? If an observer, a distant observer, who was himself scared of what was happening, when he saw Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, hang his head, his version is, he gave up the ghost. And Jesus Christ himself contradicts that. He says, I am not a ghost. Come and touch me. Look at this. These are the wounds which I suffered upon cross. And then he, to further reassure them, tells them that he feels hungry. Have they got anything to eat? And they said, yes, some fish and bread. He said, give me some of this. And then the analyst tells us that he partook of that. So that shows he was not revived from the dead. That shows he was never dead at all. And casting aside all the prejudices with which a generation is born, having heard from his fathers and forefathers and parents and forefathers about something which might have happened, the generation grows with it and never challenges the truth, normally speaking. Now, if you leave that aside and try to rethink over the issue as a neutral observer from outside, if the same facts are quoted to you, that somebody was hanged, or attempted to be hanged to death, he's taken down much earlier than normal. When his side is pierced, the wound bleeds profusely. Then he's taken quietly to some place. Then he reappears before some people. His wounds are healed by some ointment, or at least an ointment is applied. What would be the conclusion of a jury of the modern time if that jury is not prejudiced? They would obviously say that this man never died. And then he himself says, I'm not a ghost. So all this is so obvious and clear to us that there is not a shadow of doubt left, as we observe it, because we were not born with this concept of crucifixion with which most people in the Western world are born, unfortunately. So again, he hides himself from the Jewish eye. He avoids it. If it was a miracle of the nature the Christian scholars would have us believe, then he should have appeared bravely, gloriously, before the people who had attempted to kill him. There shouldn't have been no escape from the public eye. In fact, that was the time to prove to them that they had been defeated, and here is the victorious person who came out of the dead. But not, that did not happen. Why? The constant behavior of the followers and Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, after the crucifixion, tells of one thing, that he is migrating from that place, he is hiding from the public eye, he appears at night, and he reassures them that he never died. Now, after he leaves, some tales are left behind, and those are the tales which ultimately gave birth to the modern Christianity. Those tales could not be otherwise, unfortunately. There was a necessity urging them to present the matter in a different light to the people of the time. Now, if they had begun to claim that the Jews had failed in their attempt, and he proved to be a righteous person and a holy prophet, who never died upon the cross, then immediately they would have been treated as accomplices after fact. According to the law of the land, if somebody sees a criminal escape punishment and knows it and does not help the government re-arrest him, he is called in the legal term accessory after fact. So, in the Roman Empire, anybody who claimed that Jesus never died upon cross and he bore witness to it, that we saw him alive and he never did die in the first instance, he would immediately be reported to the government and he would be acted against for being an accessory in crime. Yet, to believe that he died and just say that would be the negation of his truth, of his messiahhood. So this was the via media adopted by the people for force. They started saying that, yes, he died, but not as a liar. He was not less than a man, he was more than a man, because we saw him after death, and he was revived. So this is how they defeated, in according to their own clever device, they defeated both the enemies, the government as well as the Jews. But unfortunately, they also defeated the spirit of Christianity. And that is what was inherited later on. That distorted form of Christianity took birth in this situation of compulsion, but it would have been much better if they had chosen to be otherwise, either not or to keep to themselves and be patient. Whatever they might have said about Jesus Christ, they should have suffered. Or at least they should have the bravery to say, no, he escaped your clutches, and do whatever you please to us. I'm quite sure they could not have been crucified, but some punishment might have been given them. So he was migrating at that time, and he was going to the lost tribe of Israel. And when we reconstruct the story later on, then we can see that the lost tribe of Israel had migrated to the eastern and some east and southern regions. I mean, keeping the geographical situation of Palestine, they migrated perhaps to first slightly north towards Syria, then to Iraq, and then traveled downwards to and eastward to Afghanistan, and then to Kashmir. Now, there is a perhaps when I say that, but the historians now are agreed that this is exactly where the Israelites are found. The tribes of Afghanistan, the people of Kashmir, do not belong to the subcontinent and that region. They have distinct features, distinct nomenclature of their tribes, distinct habits, and the anthropologists and the students of tribal histories and migrations, etc., agree that they were the same people as once were found in the mainlands under the title Children of Israel. So if they are the lost tribe, and he was a true prophet, he was making a prophecy that he would leave this land and go to the lost tribe of Israel, then it is there that he should be searched for. And it is exactly there that now we find evidence of his going. As far as the Ahmadiyya theology is concerned, we were all the time convinced, because from our point of view it was quite enough that Israelites are found there, and Bible is pointing a finger in that direction by telling us that he should have gone to the lost tribe of Israel. So wherever that lost tribe is found, you should search for him. But that is a long distance, spread all over 1,000 or 1,000 some miles, many, perhaps about 2,000 miles. Now, when we read the Holy Quran, another finger is pointing from a different direction, but to the same place, in fact. The Holy Quran says, وَآوَيْنَاهُمَا إِلَىٰ رَبْوَةٍ ذَاتِ قَرَارٍ وَمَعِينٍ. We sheltered, or we gave shelter, to not only to Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, but also to his mother. And we took them away to a place of safety which had certain characteristics. It was a plateau-like place, Rabwatin, a raised ground, or plateau is called Rabwa. And also it had many natural springs and fountains. Also it had peace about it, an atmosphere of peace. So if you search wherever Israelites had migrated earlier and try to find these three features, Kashmir is the right place. Kashmir, in fact, is the only place upon which all these three features can be applied correctly. It is full of natural springs and fountains. It is a peaceful region of the world and a raised plateau. So that is where he should be searched for. And that is where we find the grave, our prophet, who had migrated to Kashmir according to the legend, earlier than Islam, whose name was Yusuf, and who, according to the Puranas, the old Hindu records, historical records, was someone who had entered Kashmir at the time of Raja Shalbahan. Now this Raja Shalbahan is a contemporary of Jesus Christ, peace be upon him. And the incident quoted further indicates that it could be no one other than Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, who is being mentioned in the Puranas. Raja Shalbahan, according to these Puranas, was once on a hunting expedition when he observed some foreigner along with a few followers walking in the hills, valleys of Kashmir. So he went to him and asked him who he was. The answer was that he was a prophet who was persecuted and tortured to a degree where normally he should have died. But God saved him from that death, and then he left his people and migrated to this region. The second question was, what was his name? And he said his name was Yusasaf. And the third was, what was the name of his religion? He said it was love. Now some prophet, at the time of Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, when he disappears there, reappears here, some prophet, but bearing all the symbols, all the characteristics of Jesus Christ, peace be upon him. And no other religion claims that at that time a prophet appeared having the same characteristics and having gone through the same trials. Read the history of the world, not the remotest mention will be found of any prophet at that time, other than Jesus Christ, who had these characteristics, who was attempted to be murdered, who escaped, was not seen again in that region, and whose message was love, and whose name was Yusasaf. Now, Yusasaf is interpreted differently by different people. Some say it is a word having two words. It is one name having two words, Yus and Asaf. Yus stand for Jesus, and Asaf is another word having some significance about his, what happened to him. But it can be looked at in a different way as well. Yusas or Jesus are so similar that for Jesus to become Jesus or J to change into J, it is so common that the students of philology would tell you that it's just a natural phenomenon. So it could be Yusas, which turned Jesus, which turned into Yusas. And F sound can be added. It is an additional sound sometimes in some regions. Some sounds are added and some are subtracted. So for F to appear as an addition is not abnormal. So remove the F and what we are left with is Jesus. But again, there is a very interesting discovery just recently made by Mr. Nasir Ward, who is an English Muslim, who delivered a lecture here a few days ago on Roman history. Just in passing, he mentioned something which was very significant to Ahmadiyya theology. He said that he read in a book that there is a valley in Palestine which is called the Valley of Yusasaf. So that is a very strange coincidence, to say the least. A Yusasaf appears in the time of Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, in Kashmir, and there is a valley in Palestine known as the Valley of Yusasaf. So this is, I tried to be brief, but all this to me is so clear and so evident that I have no doubt left at all that Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, according to the design and plan of Allah, migrated like all other prophets migrate at the time of trials. And then he completed his mission and ministry by spreading his message among the Israelites, and later on got confused with Buddha. Kashmir was the region where Buddhists also had their influence earlier, and where Buddha himself had predicted that I would reappear among you. And the name given, I don't exactly remember, was also very significant. So when Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, appeared, having the same sort of message of love and non-violence, he was accepted as a Buddha. And later on, Christianity got confused with Buddhism, and for that we have positive evidence in the Buddha books, because the concept of virgin birth, the concept of reappearance in the latter days, all are mentioned in Buddhist philosophy and books. So, in my opinion, why you don't find a trace of Christianity as such in Kashmir is because, number one, of the fact that it was so similar, the teaching and the conduct of Christ and Christianity, so similar to Buddhism, And also because Buddha had predicted a new Buddha is going to appear after 500 or some years. And this is exactly when Jesus Christ is known to reappear in Kashmir. So his title changed. He was called by the local people as a Buddha. And gradually, because he never preached Trinity, so no similarity between that Christianity which was taught by Jesus himself and the Christianity which was taught behind is observable later on. So this is what happened according to me, and further evidence in fact is coming up, like in the form of Shroud of Turin and Among the Dervishes, a book published by some Oxford scholar and so on.